morning. You hear the work bell ring. And I march you to the table. You see the same old thing. Yeah. Ain't no food up on the table. There's no fork up in the pan. But you better not complain, boy. You get in trouble with the man, yeah. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me.
That's the late Buckwheat Zydeco, born Stanley Joseph Durrell Jr., and his Zydeco band with The Midnight Special. This is from his 1992 album, On Track. He died this past September 24th at the age of 68, but had elevated this music into mainstream consciousness. Zydeco was, country music, and it stayed pretty much geographically within the Louisiana area. But he made this music appeal to a broader audience, and of course, by the time he left us, he had made his mark. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. We are doing a twofer today on the program today. We're talking about Free Your Mind Friday, where you can talk about whatever you wish to talk about. But we also have those folks who couldn't get in yesterday because we had a lot more people wanting to talk than time to talk. So it's a free-for-all today. We talked yesterday about the New Order and the politics of vengeance, and we see even today, we see evidence of vengeance occurring between the Democrats and Republicans, and specifically targeting Donald Trump. And the question is, in all of this, knowing that we, the people, will be ultimately the targets, and the fallout is going to fall on us for the most part. And what do we have as some kind of a response or some way of blunting what is to come, meaning a political vehicle? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And we start with Marie from Baltimore.
Good afternoon, Latrice, and thank you so much for taking my call.
Just thank like you to for talk- calling.
Thank you. Just like to talk about a few stories that don't get into the media and are not sensational stories. Just a few. Let me finish, and I'd love to hear your comment. First, I'd like to talk about my story, which started last Sunday afternoon, January the 1st. While walking in the afternoon, exercising, and an old white man approaches me, going a different direction, and he gives me a very hard, mean look. I've never saw this man before. Next, after he passed, I met two young white women, and they all gave me a hard look while walking. I haven't seen these people at all. So for two years, I've been hearing about African Americans who look something like Arabs. They get accosted or something. I don't know what's going on. They're mistaken for Arabs. Secondly, last summer in 2015, at a popular grocery chain store, the management had the workers stand outside because there was smoke inside the store. And it was afternoon, and I decided to wait till the store opens. I stood on the curb, and a tall, white, middle-aged white man turned around to the mostly women, young women, and bawled them out for standing outside and told them they should go back and get to work and said it in a nasty way. Well, one of the workers told me if that person would have tried to physically hurt her, she had a knife ready for him. And eventually he did go away. The third thing, I listened to this talk show this week, and the talk host said that he got threats from Chicago because he had mentioned that when there's crime incidents, maybe in Chicago or nationwide, that the police get the guns from the crime scene, if there's any, and they resell them back in the neighborhood or city. That's all I have to say, and I thank
but,
you.
But what does this? What do these particular snippets that you just shared with us? Uh-huh. What do they show in your view? What is the glue here?
It shows, in my view, and others possibly, that things are getting worse, and the stories that I told you will not get in the newspapers, but they may result in things getting worse some type of way. I mentioned to you last year in the summer that I didn't see much hope in the future. And but these things that are happening affect people, like the grocery store incident. That bothered me to the point where I felt if any of these girls were attacked that I was going to take my pocketbook and hit this man. That's what I'm talking about, which didn't happen. And my first story about myself walking, by myself, minding my business, the stares that I got, it bothered me because I don't know what I've done. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, but at some point, do you think that maybe you should say not that these experiences make you feel ill at ease, but rather you should say, well, that's them. Or is it that you're feeling increasingly that it goes beyond the staring and it goes beyond the hard looks, and it now is at a level that has escalated in meaning in terms of how it's resonating with you? It has escalated in meaning. And what do you think that might be? What might be the reason that these things are resonating more and more with you at a higher level?
Well, I'm not going to say that I was responsible for these incidents. Mm-hmm. I'm just commenting on what's happening out here, except for the first one. Of course, that bothers me, and then I remember hearing for the last 2 years other Africans who have seemed to look like Arabs have been accosted in some type of way. You know, is this going to continue? That's, you know, one thought with the first story. The second one, will this later on result in, you know, violence or something? And lastly, the talk host show, if I didn't mention about Chicago, he was threatened from people in Chicago reporting the story.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, yeah. I think there is a, across the nation, I think, we are witnessing in a very graphic way. You know, we had these young people kidnapping, essentially, a young white man, actually, mm-hmm. and torturing him and then broadcasting it on Facebook. And they have absolutely no feeling about what they did. So there's something happening in society.
Yeah.
Sometimes it happens this way where you see waves of aberrant behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But we also are, we would be expecting some kind of a reaction where people are horrified by these things. But mm-hmm. they seem to become the norm, perhaps because we're more sensitive to it, mm-hmm. or perhaps because it's getting more coverage, or perhaps it's happening more often than we expect it to. So the situation really calls for you to be mindful that these experiences have happened and they have affected you deeply.
Yes.
But it's really not a healthy thing to internalize it to the point where you feel responsible somehow for other people's behavior. That's not going to help you at all.
Mm-hmm.
But you should be, and you seem to be, quite alert, quite discerning about how people are behaving, the behavior of people, and what it might suggest in terms of, are these isolated incidents?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there some kind of a common thread? Are we witnessing an increase in this kind of behavior across the board? Very important to be sensitive to, but don't cross that line and internalize it. It's not your fault at all. It is just the way society is going.
Mm.
But you should be aware, you know, and you seem to be aware of a trend developing.
Yes.
And that puts you on alert. Thanks for getting
Thank
us started
you.
Today, Marie.
Sure. Take care.
888-874-4888 is the number to call. And we are picking up from yesterday's discussion on, we're talking about I'm just losing my notes here. I wanted to get very specific about what we were talking about. We were talking about the politics of vengeance. And in this time that we're in, just as we approach the inauguration of Donald Trump as president, all kinds of crazy things are happening. But when we look more closely, we see they're not really that crazy after all. They're part of a pattern that we have witnessed several times before in the United States. That's not to dismiss what is happening as being irrelevant. It's very, very relevant, because the bottom line is, no matter how other people behave or how a system behaves, we are more than likely going to receive the fallout. And at a time when we don't have many options in terms of an organized defense, that's what we ought to be thinking about. What is our system of defense? Where do we go to keep any of this in check? You know, how do we fashion an organized way of saying, look, you know what? That's how this system is going to behave. what do we have within our control that we could turn to or that we could utilize to blunt the effects, the direct effects of the craziness that is going on out here. And we have to see we looked at the parties that we supported, and we see that they are also following an old and destructive pattern. They're not accounting for themselves. They see no need to explain to people, you know, what happened in the election or where they're going, what they're doing. And in my view, they have fallen down on the job. And because they were, at least this is what they said and represented themselves to be, a kind of bastion of protection for like-minded people who want to amalgamate their political strength. And this hopefully would have served as a form of protection. It would give them something to fight with in opposition to the standing order. But even that has fizzled away without explanation. I mean, it boggles the mind. We are 2 months after, 2 months out of the election, and nobody said a word. And they don't seem to be interested in coming back to the communities and saying, well, this is what our experience was. This is where we scored many points, and this is where we lost miserably. And here are the reasons. However, despite our losses, this is what we're gearing up to do. They're not doing that. The Democrats and the Republicans, essentially, you know, the individual candidates, they have disappeared. You know, that's the standing order. You know, they get in touch with the people every 4 years, and then they dismiss them and they go about their business. But this is a particularly worrisome time, and we have to demand a different level of performance, especially in those movements and parties in which there has been a significant investment. And again, I'm not talking about this in the sense of or defining victory the way the duopoly defines victory. I'm saying, you know, in terms of your modest vision, what happened? Where did the people's investment go? Take this whole movement. And that ought to worry us. That ought to worry us, because now we are at a point where we say, well, why should I continue? What is the benefit to supporting efforts and movements and parties that say that they are about the business of keeping a system in check or providing some level of protection, as I say, for the people? And they're not acting right. And in some cases, I think they've just collapsed on themselves. And they've adopted the same attitudes and practices of the big parties. This is unfortunate. But we should not be silent about it. It's a grievous, in my view, it is a grievous abrogation of their supposed concerns. They're representing a hurting constituency. And we ought to see different kinds of behavior coming from them. From California, Gus, what are you saying today?
Wow, an intellectual lightning bolt right into the heart of bright light. Good morning, Utrice, and
hello.
Happy New Year. I'm glad you're feeling well. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Usually I have my points all written out. This is the first time I've called you, but I've been a constant listener and enjoy your show immensely.
Thank you.
To get on with it, now you're kind of really trying to, it seems to me you're trying to move people toward seeing things in a realistic sense. However, I think we're still living in a world of words rather than actual reality. So reality in politics is defined by words. So let's just take the example of our government. Our government, no matter how many people like to talk happy talk that it's a democracy, it is not a democracy and wasn't envisioned as a democracy. It was, you know, designed as a Republican system. And I'm glad that you keep emphasizing the whole concept of the system. Now, to really simplify it, all you have to do is look up in any good dictionary the definition of a republic versus a democracy. And what I come up with in Webster's and other dictionaries is that a democracy is where the power directly flows up from the people. In other words, decisions come up through committees. And let's see here. So Libya, in a way, was a hybrid democracy, much more than we are, because a lot of the main decisions came up through community committees. Now, a republic is defined as a government where the people elect the leaders and the leaders hold the power. So once you elect the leader, they make the decisions. So we really shouldn't expect any kind of democratic change out of Republicans. We have to see things through the eyes of how they see it. And their equation is not power sharing. It's power control. So their goal, which they have achieved, is to gather complete control of the levers and reins of power, which they have done. What's his face? George W. Bush's ugly little minion. His nickname was Turd Blossom. The name escapes me right now. But anyway, he even stated it. He even stated it straight out. This is what we're going to do. We're going to take over all the state governments, the governorships. We're going to rewrite all the rules, and we're going to control it, and that's where we are now. Now, my second point is that we really don't need to be reinventing a strategy. We just need to update. You know, it's all been done before. All you have to do is look at the history of fascism. Fascism is a reaction to progressive socialism by rich people. And the politicians are another way for them to wield power. So, you know, in the end, they will use whatever violent methods they have used in the past, and they have no compunction. All we have to do is look at how they've overturned governments, killed leaders. So we really have to look at, you know, we're going to have to sacrifice some people who are going to die. You know, the progressivism that came through with the New Deal was a result of 100 years of tough working men confronting the power structure face-to-face, not Facebook-to-Facebook. So unless we're willing to do that and, like, go, you know, instead of internet organizing, go neighbor-to-neighbor, just like the Mormons do, talking to people, really get to know them, you know, it's basically hopeless. So anyway, that is what I have to say, and, you know, we've got a whole year. But I agree with the two guys yesterday that said, you know, this is going to be a long-term thing. The Republicans took the long view, and obviously we don't want any Democrat back in unless, you know, they find out that they could be real Democrats. You know,
I agree with what you're saying. However, I still say that this is the time to do some brutal auditing of those political systems that professed a duty or a desire to represent the interests of those people who have been victims of the system. Mm-hmm. This is a point they have to account. And I don't think that they're doing themselves or doing us or doing history any favors by absenting themselves from this particular task. They have to get engaged. Or
okay, they
I think
meaning,
people should...
They meaning who? Who are
yeah,
you talking about?
And if they don't do it, and this is why I say we have to have clarity now, and with clarity, a determination to make decisions in our own interests ourselves. If the parties that and movements that were supported, and they have been supported quite significantly, maybe, you know, I'm not comparing them to the support of the Democrats and so forth. I'm taking it in the context of what they set out to do, and the question is, you know, how far did we get with the plans that they had? How far did we go? What was the result, the end result, meaning you've done an audit and you can see where you made some strides or you can see where you made some mistakes. But to say nothing is to adopt, in fact, the attitude of mainstream politics, and we can't afford that. People are at a point, and I think this is something to be considered, at a point where things are going to get so bad, and I'm not trying to be, you know, so pessimistic. I'm trying to just be realistic. We either go it alone and walk away from these efforts that you know, pop up every 4 years and say, well, we are a different party. Well, okay, prove it. And either we get more energized about working together, or we leave you alone, get out, and try to survive the best we can on our own. But let's not continue this deception that we are getting somewhere when we're seeing evidence of reckless action, we're not seeing a well-organized effort. And it's not just about pointing fingers. It is about trying to figure out what's wrong. What is happening? And, for example, people are asked, and many thousands, as we saw, thousands and thousands of people, 13 million votes is nothing to sneeze at. And yet, there has been no public accounting. And the chief individual, Bernie Sanders, has not been made to pay a price. And it's not about, you know, trying to demonize him. It is saying, we entrusted you with 13 million votes. You have to explain what you did with those votes. And the movement itself has to ask the question, how did we let this happen? So that we don't do this again. Simply because people present themselves and say, okay, well, we are left of center or we are radicals or whatever. The time has long gone for people to just accept that. We need an accounting. We need some kind of accounting for what they have done with the investment made. Because that's the only way that people can move forward intelligently.
Utrice?
Yes.
Okay, I just have one more little thing. You probably have other callers. I think that anybody that has paid attention over the long term understands what has happened. And I think any kind of – all you have to do is go back to the 2000 election, you know, where the Bush camp stole the election and Gore rolled over. So what anybody that is going to be in this, you know, political system is going to do is they will never stand up. They might make a token little gesture for the people. And I just think that it's painfully obvious what's going on. And I think asking or begging, you know, like Frederick Douglass said, power yields nothing without a demand. So it's not, an accounting is not a demand. A demand, what the other side sees and what they assert in foreign policy is that our enemies, which is what the other side is as far as I'm concerned, understand only one thing, and that's force. And that's what they deal with. Otherwise, they will just dismiss us or you or anyone that says, hey, what about an explanation, as a naive child. So
well,
I think we're wasting our time asking for any kind of explanation because it's obvious as the nose on your face what's going on. We have fascism here. We better realize it, and we better get our boots on and get ready for it and not
get lost in
all this verbiage.
In the meantime, those organs and organizations and parties and movements that have presented themselves, have come to the community and presented themselves as worthy of consideration and support and as having a vested interest in our general welfare.
We can't ask anybody else.
The point is, if they don't behave differently, if they are behaving the way the major parties are behaving, then it makes sense for people to just walk away, to dismiss them, because this is what is important too. You have to do things differently in order to inspire people to continue to support and to continue to look at these movements and parties, etc., as viable means of taking on the system. But when you're behaving the same way, then people are entitled, and I made that decision a long time ago. I'm not involved. The parties have been behaving atrociously, and they don't seem to get it, that these are rudimentary things that reflect your commitment to these ideological precepts that you preach about. When you, 2 months after the election, there's no counting. There's not a word, there's no assessment, there's no briefing, so that it gives people the idea that even though we suffered a setback, here are some of the things that we have learned, and we are now moving forward. This is what we intend to do. But you're behaving just like the Democrats, just like the Republicans. And so don't blame people for walking away and regarding you as such, that in many ways you're no different from the people that we're supposed to be fighting against. The Sanders movement is just crazy. It's just crazy that they never, ever, ever publicly upbraided and disciplined Bernie Sanders. And we've had nothing but silence. What the heck is that? And that's just basic politics now. You owe people an explanation. And it helps also increase your credibility. Because at the very root of all of these movements should be honesty. Openness, honesty, and accountability. And they haven't done it. Thanks for your call, Gus. From New Jersey, Michael, you're on the air.
Thank you, Therese, and hello to the PRN audience.
Thank you.
And Happy New Year.
Thank you, and the same to you too, Michael. What is your contribution today?
Well, I've been thinking, as you asked us to think, and that's a dangerous thing. Or it could be just ineffective. But as regards to the questions that you've been kind of pointing to us to look at and think about, and they're not exactly as you put them, but I construed them to be, what should we be doing? what should our political orientation be? How should we be viewing politics? And what is our future, our survival, our defenses? And I really agree with our friend David from Brooklyn, who said that, you know, that the two-party system and the politics that we have today, getting involved in that is like, you know, changing your seat on a sinking ship, which I identified with. I agree with that. I found a particular quote, and I won't bore us with a long, belabor us with a long thing that somebody else said, but there's a doctor, Professor David Bohm, who has a little quote here that I think fits into my own thinking on this, and maybe David agrees too. David Bohm is a physicist and a philosopher, but he said, we can see that the most that political action itself can do would be to buy time. If our intention was to bring about change, and we see that politics at best can only buy time and to change our understanding, then we won't mistakenly think politics is a tool to use to bring about change. Politics basically just shifts back and forth between existing belief structures. So seeing this limitation of the political process puts it in its proper place. We now can see that we use politics where it is appropriate to buy time, but not where it is inappropriate to bring about real change. And maybe we're viewing politics wrong. I always thought, you know, back when I took a course in the social movements, that it was always social movements that brought about change. And politics was really, like David Bohm is saying, just shifting between two kinds of philosophies, let's say, of two political understandings. But it's not bringing about change, because if it could, or after all these years, we would have solved poverty, crime, hunger, health issues, and none of these have been, you know, solved. So politics is perhaps the wrong tool to use, and its correct tool is just to buy time. And maybe we should be using politics now to protect ourselves, to buy time, and to take the teeth out of the political parties and structures, to sort of take away their power somehow. Because in my view, politics should just be the politicians should just be bureaucrats. They shouldn't be pomp and circumstance, you know, parading around with white gloves and riding around in horse-drawn carriages and throwing flowers at them. This is like archaic, like we're saluting the king or something, the new king. They should just be bureaucrats. They should apply for the job, go to work, and that's it. And but it's not like that. As we could see, it's a cult of personality and power. And I think this is undermining the people and their basic essential needs.
Well, I agree substantially with you here. I think that definition about politics is a pretty, I mean, it hits the mark, which is the point I've been trying to make. Politics has already been defined by the system. But there's no need for us to buy into that definition, which is one of the primary reasons, I think, for alternative movements. One of the biggest things that they can do and accomplish is encouraging people to access their own power to make changes where they are. It is not just about, you come together to, you know, aggregate your power to achieve specific agendas. But after all of that, the point is that the great success of independent movements is that it should empower individuals to be their own self-guided missiles in daily life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the greatest service that these movements can accomplish. And then you aggregate your power to achieve particular ends and goals, but that's a strategic move. The whole idea of asking people to come together presupposes that they understand systems and how to work these systems, because exactly that. You have to have some kind of, or it would help to have some kind of cushion against what's happening and what's happening now. You see?
Right now,
right this minute.
Exactly.
Right after the election, people have returned to a state of powerlessness.
Right.
So how has the Sanders movement or any other movement improved people's vision and clarity about the fact that they have power and they ought to work on understanding just that? And now you with that power, what is that power that you have? Where can you make changes? Where can you use your power to survive? That's the whole idea of politics.
Well, I think, yes, Eucharist, if I could just jump in a little bit. I think this is maybe what we should be using politics for at this point. Now, you know, we missed the boat, okay, in 2016. Mm-hmm. We missed the boat. You know, it was taken away from us, and we were manipulated. We were played the three shell game. You know, which shell is the coin under? And none of us guessed right, so we lost. You know, we lost our chance in 2016. So what now we should be using politics for? Maybe we should look at Dr. Bohm's suggestion. We should be using it to buy time to survive, to protect ourselves as defense. Maybe that's all politics is really good for.
I couldn't agree more with that as a strategy. The idea is to help people survive. That's the main thing. The first order of the day is surviving.
Yes,
and
I
in order
agree.
To survive, you have to realize that you're going to be coming up against a deeply entrenched system that has figured out how to survive.
Well,
for hundreds of years,
promising
the
change.
Democratic Party and the Republican Party, they've survived no matter what the opposition.
Right.
So we have to retool. I absolutely agree with you there. And it's a great point that you made today. I hope people are listening to that.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Ali from New York. Professor Ali, how are you today? Is she there? Okay, we lost her. Oh, I thought we had Ali next. Okay. Well, Sean, hello. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Trace. Great question that you put out yesterday. I was waiting online. A lot of us called, and we didn't get in. So I'm thinking, like, the best way to go about unifying all of us is to have just a website that we can all log into so that we can really get a vote on who we think the president should be. So you have all the candidates, you have podcasts, you have how they feel about different topics, and have, like, a month. There's no registration, no, you know, personal information needed, just like an email address. And we can really see who people agree with. And when they show up to a problem, people really react. So if you have someone who had, you know, 50 million views and likes, you know, if 50 million people decide not to buy a product, that makes corporations react. And politics takes direction from corporations. Corporations take direction from consumers. How do you feel about that?
Well, I tend to be a fundamentalist. I like the idea of getting to the root of things and straightening them out at that level first. Spend the time.
Yeah, I think we'll all contribute to something like that.
But I'm saying that we also have to break the pattern of being of feeling compelled to respond to things as they flare up. So we become accustomed to short-term projects. We need to establish
a
system
of thinking.
We need to establish for ourselves a system of thinking and operating. That ultimately is where political power comes from, and economic power, and social power. It all comes from getting to that root understanding of who we are, what are our standards, what do we identify as the great goals in life individually and in concert with others. How do we make the planet better? But first, we got to get the fundamentals right. And we are always encouraged to be part of a distraction. But it may not, when you look at the history of these things, you see that there is no sustained benefit because we're constantly looking at new ways to utilize energy and our focus. But we are ignoring. If I were to ask any individual right now, what do you believe? It would take some time for them to give me an answer because first they have to think about it.
Well, our podcast can fix that.
Huh?
You know, a simple like video, a simple someone like giving their idea about a solution and a problem can change that with the mind. So, I mean, if we make it available for every human in America to like vote for the people that they think that agrees with them, that like they feel the same way that person would go about facing that problem, I think that person would then gain the power. And not like we all know, we're all preaching to the choir. And for the audience, like, stop telling us about, you know, how bad it is. We know. Let's start addressing and start supporting the people that we think feel the same way we do and could amass, you know, really economical power. So, you know, I mean, CFCs were taken out of, like, hairspray because a lot of people, like, found out about it. So let's not legitimize the New York Times because it's irrelevant in our lives. We know that. So I feel like if we, you know, I mean, it has such economical potential, too. I mean, a billionaire listening to me right now could, like, set up a website so that we could all – aren't we all curious to see who we would vote for? Because we know the polls and the networks and the, you know, the whole co-opted media is not giving us the truth. The truth could be found if we all just agree to say, hey, let's sign into a website and see who we really like.
Well, you see, it's to me, it still does not address.
Now more than ever, though. Now more than ever, we all feel we would do that.
Well, I still think that the work that needs to be done is highly individual in the first instance. You really have to invest in yourself. Look, to be very frank about it, most people refuse to invest any time or effort or energy in trying to understand where they are in the scheme of things. They expect that to be given to them. An understanding of themselves is to be given to them. The answer is to be given to them. The solution is to be given to them. So they fundamentally lack a personal understanding of how their lives are working or not working and why. They don't want to do that work. Tell me who to vote for. Show me, you know, what a new website I can go to and get this information. They're not reading. They're not extending themselves beyond who they are right now. They expect the answers to come from outside. And that is one of the biggest obstacles to progress. They're not investing in the work of learning and understanding so that they can be useful and, in fact, valuable in terms of their contribution to this so-called collective agenda that we supposedly want and we desire. There isn't very much of a contribution that they could make there beyond very limited a very limited range, and that has to be given to them. The work is to help people improve their own understanding of themselves, of the system that they're dealing with, because that individual power is the most important kind of power we need. We need intelligent people. It's like, you know, in a war, the soldier has a gun, but he's shooting it in the wrong direction. We have a lot of that going on, even in leadership. You have a lot of leaders who are totally misguided. They have no clue about what's going on, and they won't admit it. And so we see the result and the consequences in reckless action or inaction or making the wrong decisions, because they're also surrounded by people who haven't done the work. They're not doing the work of trying to just extend themselves a little bit to understand the system that they want to resist. You know, it's like every now and then you see a news headline about a Catholic priest who thinks that the Catholic Church needs a change. And you crack up. You laugh. Because it means that this priest, as idealistic as he is and well-meaning as he is also grossly uninformed about the Catholic Church. It is the epitome of systems and how they work. And they're designed to resist change. Now, you're going to go into a fight with following somebody who has no real understanding about what the system is and isn't educating people about what the system is, then you're just wasting time. You're an impediment to progress. The best work of any political movement or any social movement is that it gives or helps people arrive at a source of power within themselves through knowledge and education about the systems that surrounds us and which controls our lives in so many ways. That's the work that they can do, and that's where power starts. You're not talking, this is not just a coming together of people who have no minds. That's the greatest resistance that could be mounted against any organized system. People who know what they're doing. Or at least they're armed, well armed, to engage in battle. We're not seeing that. We're not seeing that at all. Randolph from Montreal, you're on the air.
Thank you, Eutrice. What surprises me a great deal is that Congress is studying this so-called hacking. Why? The question is, why is this so important, when what is important really is what has been happening in the countries where the United States has been attempting to overthrow governments. Surely that's far more important. I mean, if United States requires respect, which I think that's what they want, domination, surely this could be found in their own country. In other words, how well they care for and treat their citizenry would be what the rest of the world would respect from them. Do you not think so?
Oh, yes, I agree with that. But I also understand, again, how systems work. I always keep that in my head. The first question I ask myself about anything is, what is the system here? Or what are the systems that are interlocked in this particular story or endeavor or event? who's involved? Well, right now, this is a major concern because there is a need to move the country in a direction back to the old days of the Cold War, because this creates the atmosphere on a mass level to encourage people to approve of war, because that's what they want. They want a war. They want a war. There's nothing that changes the economy and gets people more patriotic. There's a lot of benefit from the point of view of the system to going to war. It may not be an actual war with bombs, but it would be a war, psychological warfare, and that's part of the an essential component of the military, the PSYOPs unit, psychological operations. We're all experiencing it. The media have signed on because they are willing participants in propaganda, and they are stoking the fires that the average American should dispense with logic and the kinds of questions that you are asking today and the thoughts that you're presenting today, which is, again, reflective of just what I said. Right. When you are an educated person or when you understand what is going on, you are the worst. You are the worst enemy of the system. Right now, the entire country and many countries in the world are being conditioned to accept the inevitability of war. And the conditions are being laid out now to get us to be at ease with that and to see the logic of going to war. We are being conditioned to accept the unacceptable. So you need a demon. Russia is the demon now of choice. There is no logic to any of the premises that the United States is presenting now as reason to put Russia in check. If it comes to spying, well, hello. Isn't this what we learned from Snowden and the intelligence agencies? They spy on everybody. They spied on Angela Merkel of Germany. They spied on just about every head of state. They're spying on their own citizens. So there is, it's so illogical to believe or to get people to believe that a country that is so steeply involved in spying now is the victim of spying.
Right.
But that's what the campaign calls for. We are being conditioned. So they're conditioning us for the possible war against Russia. And at the same time, it is a distraction. If we're so consumed about Russia spying on us, now all of a sudden you have the logical... Oh, we're out of time. I'm so sorry. We'll continue
really
this
nice of you. Thank you very,
another
very
time.
Much.
But you get the general gist, and I so appreciate your call today. Thanks so much for joining me. Coming up next is Dr. Jack Rasmus with Alternative Visions. Have yourselves a great weekend surrounded by positive people, and we'll see each other on Monday. Thanks so much.
Let the Midnight Special shine a light.